Blog Talk Radio.
Are you due for a relationship makeover? If you had the power to wave a magic wand, would you use it to improve your relationship? Well, there may be some hope. You're about to embark upon a journey. A journey that may prove to be vital in improving your relationship, whether it be with your spouse, significant other, children, co-worker, family, friends, or even yourself. A journey that if you simply open your mind to desiring a positive change in your relationship by listening to this show, it just might happen. You're about to take a journey into the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. Warning, the show can be contagious.
Well, hello once again, and welcome to this edition of the Dr. Jesse Walker Show. I'm your host. I'm Dr. Jesse Walker. I'm going to be with you for the next 60 minutes. It's very good to be back. We've sort of been on a vacation for a few weeks, and I'm so excited to be back here doing that thing that is very near and dear to me. We're going to be bringing a couple of featured guests in tonight that's going to be with us this evening, and I'm certainly looking forward to their being a part of our programming. So we've got a great show planned for you tonight. It's a show that's really, when I tell you it's near and dear to my heart, it is in fact really near and dear to my heart. And I certainly hope and trust that you all will tune in as well to this show tonight. So first I want to just go ahead and allow my two special guests to come in. We have Ms. Audrey Davis-Dunning. She's going to come in and tell us a little bit about herself, what it is she does, and how she does it. And so without further delay, and we'll get to the story shortly, but I want to go ahead and bring Ms. Davis in. Ms. Davis-Dunning, welcome to the show this evening, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jesse Walker. It is always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what it is that you do, how you do it, and why you do it.
Yes. I am an educator. I've been in higher ed for almost 23 years as an administrator as well as a college professor. I am an African dancer, and I have an African dance ensemble, performance ensemble. And I am a businesswoman who gives empowerment workshops to women called Get Your Guidance to keep the woman strong and moving in the right direction.
Get Your Guidance. That's Get Your Guidance. So it's like people who don't have their guidance, they got to get it and help.
No, it's actually Get Your Goddess.
What's that last word you're saying?
A goddess.
Okay, all right. Excellent. Yes. How long have you been doing that?
Oh, going on about 2 years now.
Okay, all right. Excellent. Yes. And obviously you're having fun with that. Is that your passion, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. Because it's my belief that all women are goddesses. And my job and my mission is to help women have their inner goddess be front and center in their life so they can walk powerfully through this world.
Okay. All right. I like that. Get Your Goddess. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have a number of mentees that you are sort of dealing with?
Yes, I actually do. I do workshops. I have an online community, and I also do some personal coaching. And I really, really am enjoying it, and I love the feedback I'm getting from the women. I also incorporate my African dance movements as part of my live workshops as one of the many tools that women can use to activate their goddess.
Okay, all right, okay. Wow, and so this is like a passion for you. Is that fair to say?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
All right. Now, okay, we're going to actually stand by Ms. Davis-Dunning, and we're going to bring in another one of our featured guests, Minister Nelly Joseph. She's going to be joining us tonight. Minister Joseph, are you with us this evening?
Yes, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can. Thank you so very much for joining us this evening. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your ministry, how you do it, why you do it, and how people may be able to reach out to you.
Okay, well, good evening, everyone. Dr. Walker, I would like to thank you, first of all, for allowing me to come on the show again. It's always a pleasure. Again, my name is Nelly, and I just launched Transformed Heart. And what this ministry entails is of me basically sharing my testimony about some of the things that I dealt with as a younger child and even as an adult, and how I testify of how the Lord has healed my heart. And what I like to go around and do is just basically share my story and just to empower people to know that no matter what you've been through in life, that there is always purpose, that God created you with purpose. And the scripture that I always start out with is Jeremiah 29:11. And that's what I've been summoned by God to do, is just basically share my testimony, let everyone know about that broken part of me that I was walking around with, those hidden things, the hidden hurt that was inside of me that I wasn't letting anyone know about, and how God delivered me, and how God just basically turned everything around for me, and how I had to basically open up my heart to Him. And that's what Transformed Heart is about, just speaking about how your heart can be transformed through the power of God.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Minister Joseph. What would you say in Transformed Heart? Is there anything, of course, if there's anything that either one of you all don't care to share, just ask, you know, just say simply pass on that. But it seems like sometimes we all have a dark corner in our lives that perhaps we don't even want to talk about. But for some reason, maybe there's an opportunity to share with someone else that may be going through a situation. And once they hear what you're presenting, it makes them take stock and say, you know what? Because she came out of this or he came out of that, then maybe I too can come through this, can see my way clear of this. Is there a dark spot that you may have had that brought you to where you are today?
Definitely. You know, my first conference with Transformed Heart was in August. And, of course, I was a little bit nervous when the Lord touched my heart and told me that he wanted me to tell people about the broken part, that broken side of me that I was hiding from everyone, and he was going to use it for his glory. And at first I was a little nervous, like, Lord, okay, I'll tell some things, but I'm not putting my business out there. But when I read about the woman at the well, how the Lord touched her, and she went and told everyone, come see a man. And because that, she was testifying about what the Lord did for her, people came. And that's the scripture that I hold on to. You know, the scripture says that we overcome by our testimony. And so it's time for us to just be open, and it's power in speaking about what you've been through. Like with me, I probably would have been ashamed before to tell people that I've dealt with eating disorder, I've dealt with being molested, I've dealt with depression, I've dealt with so many things growing up. But let me tell you, after that first conference, the feedback that I received, to see the love that I received, and to see the amount of people that was there that left me notes, that called me and said, it's about time that someone is willing to speak about that broken side of them, and to hear how God healed my heart. Because that's one side, that's one bold part to let you know if you've been healed, is if you can speak about it. You know, some of us, we walk around and we have all that hurt and bitterness in our heart, and we can never talk about it. It's like we're still victims of those things. And so now, because I know that I'm free, and my heart has been transformed, I have no problem with sharing my story. I have no problem with telling people, because I've been seeing that with me opening up and sharing what God has done for me, where he's taken me from, the amount of people that's coming forth, and like, now that you've shared your story, they're sharing their story with me. They're opening up. I had one person said they finally had a good night's sleep after the conference. Mm-hmm. And so there's power in letting people know this is what, you know, I've been through. God has taken me from.
Well, I am so happy to hear that. And certainly I feel that whatever you contribute on tonight's broadcast is certainly the, you know, experience as an educator, and your experience and ministry, I'm sure you're going to prove to be a blessing to our viewers, our listeners tonight in tonight's program. We may end up staying with just the two of you all and not branch out, because I know that there are a number of people that have been waiting for this topic. As a matter of fact, this is a special topic tonight. Tonight's topic is how to apply tough love. How to apply tough love. Ms. Davis Dunning, let me come to you just quickly and ask you, what is, when you hear the words tough love, what comes to mind for you?
When I hear that term, I think about a communication that may be a little difficult and a little challenging, because, of course, you want to be sensitive to people's sensitivities. And when you are approaching someone from a stance of tough love, you may be wanting to impart some information that they might not necessarily want to hear, or maybe really tough to hear. So there's usually a little bit of anxiety and trepidation about it. But for me, when I'm in situations where I have to administer some tough love, the thing that I try to focus on is my intention. What is the intention of the communication? And if you focus on your bigger intention to tell them a piece of information that may be vital to their growth, tell them a piece of information that may be impeding a situation and they may not even realize it. If you stick to the intention, it makes it a lot easier to go ahead and have that awkward conversation, because you know that the greater goal is much bigger than any potential nervousness you may be experiencing at the time around that.
All right. Well, that is definitely interesting perspective. And let me ask you, Minister Joseph, when you hear that term, you know, tough love, I mean, that can be a very, I mean, some people define it one way and others may define it a different way. What comes to your mind when someone says, you know, tough love, and then now you're asking a question, how to apply that? What comes to your mind?
Tough love. Tough love to me is like that medicine that your mom used to give you growing up. It smelled bad, it looked bad, it felt bad, it tasted bad, but it's good for you. You need it. Without it, you'll still be in pain. You'll still have to suffer whatever illness that you have. When you're getting it, when you're receiving it, it don't feel good, but it's needed. It's going to help you to move to the next level. It's just like the Bible says, open rebuke is better than secret love. Whenever you're getting rebuked, it don't feel good, but you need it, because it's for correction. It's to help you. And so when I hear tough love, you know, it's hard to hear love and tough in the same sentence, but it's needed, because love covers everything. Love helps and heals everything. So it's necessary, but when you're getting it, it don't feel good.
Okay. So what about, let me start with you, Minister Joseph, and ask this question. What about when you have a tough kid? And we're going to get to tonight's story in just a second or two. And we welcome certainly all the comments that you all may have out there. We'll do our best to get to some of the comments that you may send in on tonight's broadcast. But when it comes to tough love, what about the case where you may have an unruly child? You know, we're going to ask that you all monitor your phones, because there's feedback that comes into this. We're in a brand new studio, and we pick up every child. So we're just asking that you all be mindful of that. But Minister Joseph, let me just ask you this question. What is it that when you have an unruly child and you're trying to, for whatever reason, you're trying to get this kid on track, you know, you're doing your best, and the school is constantly calling you. You know, you just can't see. You know, you're leaving your job over and repeatedly, and this kid just won't get it together. And you're trying to do it, whether you're a dual family or a single family. What advice, if any, could you give someone that may be experiencing something like that and trying to apply tough love?
You know what? I would first say that as the parent, the tough love starts with you, because if you see that you're trying everything and the child is not changing, then now you have to sit back and find out, what are you doing wrong? I've always heard the saying that it takes a village to raise a child, And so maybe you need to reach out to other parents. You need to reach out to counselors. You need to reach out to those that have more experience. And sometimes you can see it, people who are on the outside can see clearer. So the tough love starts with you, because sometimes we have to face it that we're doing something wrong as a parent. What am I doing wrong? Why this child wants to listen to me? Why are they out? Because there's a reason for everything. So in that situation, I would say as a parent, you have to now look at what are you doing wrong? What can you change? How can you reach that child? What are some things that you need to do within yourself? Maybe you need to sit down with, you know, some older parents, some parents who've been, or others who've been through the same thing you're going through, to find out what did they do. And maybe you need to do the same thing they did to see if you can get a different response.
All right. I think that that's an interesting view. Yeah. I mean, I think you got to keep doing things until you find something that works. But then how far? Let me shift this one over to Ms. Davis-Dunning. How far do you go? I mean, you know, that becomes the question. How far can one possibly go trying to get this kid, you know, to get on course without strangling them? Yes.
Well, you know, kids can really test, you know, your patience. But my immediate answer to your question is you can never go too far. You can never do too much to try to solve the issue at hand, because, yeah, you know, your child is not only your child that you love dearly and often more than anything else in life, and two, but your child is your legacy. It's your family's legacy. It is, you know, you want to give your all to your child, and there's never too much love, there's never too much research, there's never too much outreach that most parents would do for their child to get to the bottom and the root cause of what is causing this disruption. Because as we know, you know, if things aren't handled at a younger age, you know, at the younger age, it's disruptive in the house. It may take up a lot of time and energy, but if you allow that problem to fester, the way it will manifest in adulthood can be absolutely devastating. So as a result, it's better to kind of wrestle the beast now at a young age and wait to take its most extreme and damaging form as an adult.
All right, I think that's a thought. Yeah, they say it's always better to catch them when they're younger as opposed to waiting until they get older, because then, you know, it goes with the scripture, Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way that he should go. Because if you wait until it's too late, then you know what? You know, and I hate to use the word that it could be too late, but I think it becomes much more difficult, as you all have expressed in tonight's show. Let me go here now, and what I want to be able to do is I want to read the story tonight's topic, and I want you all both, we're going to come back to you and ask you all to chime in on giving me your thoughts. Once again, you're listening live to the Dr. Jesse Walker Show, 347-857-1769. Once again, 347-857-1769. You can listen to this show in its entirety 20 minutes after the broadcast. You can also listen online at drjessewalker.com or drjessewalkerinc.com. Either one of those will get you there. Tonight's topic, if you're just joining us, is how to apply tough love. And my producers are letting me know that this will probably be part one, which we'll do a follow-up at some point in time. Tonight's characters are Maggie, Neil, and Oscar. Maggie is now a single mom after 8 years of a horrible marriage to Neil, the father of her two children. And then she has a third child, which is the oldest son, Oscar, from a previous marriage. The marriage was extremely difficult for a number of factors, which made things difficult for the children as well. Finally, it's over between them, but Maggie's problems are now beginning with her out-of-control son, Oscar, the oldest one. Oscar, of course, is a 12-year-old from a previous relationship that we mentioned earlier prior to her marriage to Neil. In fact, Oscar, as seemingly as it would be, Oscar contributed greatly to the problems that Maggie and Neil had in their marriage, as Maggie would always intervene when Neil, her husband, tried his best to discipline Oscar for things he needed to be disciplined about. Now, after some time contemplating issues in their marriage, Neil decided that he had had enough, and he actually moved out, ultimately leading to their divorce. Now Maggie is really catching it with Oscar, and he has now been kicked out of his middle school. It appears that all the efforts that Neil put in trying to get this kid on track have been to no avail, because Maggie would always rescue Oscar, and now he has turned on her. In fact, Oscar has gotten much worse, which leaves Maggie crying on a nightly basis with hopes that God will intervene. Maggie has failed to use any tough love when it came to Oscar, despite what Neil tried to tell her, that she need to apply tough love. The questions that we start out with tonight, and we're going to go to Minister Joseph with the first question. And, of course, if anyone that's listening, you want to chime in, we'll try to get to you tonight. The show goes so fast. As a matter of fact, we've got about 35 minutes before we start to bring the show to a close this evening. And we start out with Minister Joseph by asking this question. Is it all Maggie's fault that Oscar is even like this? Is it all her fault?
No, I'm not going to say it's all her fault. I'm not going to say. I don't like to do the blame game. I don't think it's all her fault. I think that both parents played a role in it, and also the child also. So, no, I would not say it's all her fault.
Okay. All right. And I know I've heard what you said, you want to play the name game or the blame game. Now, I mean, if you were to say, I mean, here's a woman, here's Maggie, who Neil, being the stepfather, he's trying to get the child on course, and she jumps in and she rescues him. I remember even myself, I try not to talk about myself much on here, but I remember that as a child growing up, whenever my father was home, which was rare, but he was a mechanic by trade. And he would often want to try to show me how to do some repairs on cars so that I could learn something in life as a young kid. But what I would do is I would start whining and crying loud enough so that my mom could hear me, and she would come out and say, he doesn't need to be out here. And she'd find a reason, like, he doesn't need to be out here in this cold weather, or whatever it was. She always came to rescue me. And as a result of her rescuing me, my father would say, go in the house. You're just like your mom. Just go in the house. Go in the house. And instead of making me stand there and learn something, and now today, I kind of wish that he had ignored my mom. I love my mom very much. She's deceased now. Both parents are. But I think it's costing me so much now in auto expenses, because I can't even change the oil on the car, and it gets to be expensive with the cars that I drive, and so it's like, if I just know what's going on, car won't crank. I've learned that, okay, it could be the battery, or it could be the starter, but it took me years to learn even that much. So my point that I'm making, Minister Joseph, is sometimes we can whine as children. And when the mother rescues us, like it sounds like the case with Maggie, she's not helping him. And my father should have exercised tough love. So when you say it's not all her fault, based on what I'm just saying to you, what portion of this would you say she may have contributed to this, if any?
I think that she did. If we're going to look at your situation, I think she did play a role in it. And to me, it's all in the upbringing. Like, for example, in my culture, if I do something in my household, the question first is who raised her? Who raised her? Who's her parents? Because we learn, like you're saying, from a young age, we begin to look at certain things. When I grew up, I was raised where my mom, when it was time to cook dinner, my stepfather's place was fixed. And we could not sit in that chair. We could not touch anything. It was like he was... That spot was for a king. But this is what I was raised seeing. So in my own household, this is how I am going to be also, because this is what I grew up seeing. So that's why I said I don't want to play the blame game and blame everything on her, because then I have to find out how was she raised. Because now we're seeing a lot of things that are happening right now in our society, in our family, But this is not how everything was back in the day. We saw more fathers in the home. We saw more wives. There were more housewives. They took care of the home. They took care of the children. And you didn't have so many of our kids running wild and doing so many things. But right now you're seeing so many what I'm calling everything is not lining up with the way God ordained it, with the husband and the father being the house, the head of the household, and the wife submissive. You're not really seeing that anymore. And so that's why I said, well, I don't want to put all the blame on her, because how was she raised? What did she grow up seeing? Because however way you're raised is how you're going to be in your household a lot of times.
Yeah, and that's interesting. So I agree. It does depend a great deal on how you're raised, and you turn around and raise your kids the same way. But, you know, Maggie's not doing this kid justice by doing what she's doing. Let's go to our educator here, Ms. Davis Dunning. Let's go to you. And, of course, if anybody want to chime in, we'll try to get to you. You can press 1 on your dial, and we'll try to bring you on board to take a question or two, or listen to a comment that you may want to make. Ms. Davis Dunning, let me just ask you, do you think that this is all of Maggie's fault, or do you think it's any of her fault?
Well, like the minister, she certainly plays a role, but my question also becomes, you know, I wonder, does she feel some level of guilt about the fact that Oscar's father isn't present? Does she feel that Neil doesn't have the right to really discipline? Is she in flux about that? Does she feel like she has to protect Oscar maybe because, you know, he's been through a lot in her mind, so, you know, give him a break? So these are the kind of questions that come to my mind, that, you know, what's motivating her behavior? I'm certain, like, you know, every parent, your intentions are good in the way you move forward with your child, but those are some of the questions that I'm wondering about that motivate her behavior. Does she play a role? Absolutely, positively. But, you know, what is her motivation? And does the father, is the father in his biological father in place at all of these factors? But, you know, going back to what I stated earlier about, you know, the method unfolds, the longer things persist, you know, you described Maggie's angst at this stage where he's 12, you know, it's probably harder to manage at 12 than it is, you know, at 10 or at 8 or at 6. So she plays a role, and now, you know, she's going to have to deal with the cleanup and the repair.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. This type of attitude that Oscar has as a 12-year-old, in your opinion, where is it likely to lead him if some straightening doesn't get, and that's a loose term that I use, if some straightening doesn't take place, where is this likely to lead him?
Disastrous, which goes to my earlier statement where I was like, nip it in the bud, get the root now, because in junior high school, look at the repercussions. Okay, there might be a suspension, there might be a fight in school, you might be on punishment or something like that. That's one level of repercussions. But if you carry, God forbid, this behavior into your 20s, when you become legal age, now the repercussions are heavier. Could be, you know, jail time, a record, you know, things that are much more devastating long term. So again, my immediate response is, let's nip it in the bud quickly when the problem is manageable and the stakes aren't as high. The older you get, the stakes are higher and the cleanup is messier. Yeah.
I believe that. Minister, with that in mind, Minister Joseph, let me ask you this question. I mean, here we're looking at, I mean, we can speculate, all of us, all around. Oh, he doesn't have the father in the home now. Was there something going on at the time? Did Maggie have to rescue him? The fact of the matter is Maggie there? She has two other children she has got to deal with. Oscar's the oldest one now. So regardless of whatever is happening, the situation is what it is right now. Here it is, Maggie is crying every night, hoping that God will intervene. Does a male role model have to be in this child's life to make a difference? I mean, you know, you all forgive me, but I just don't I just don't subscribe to that being the full thing, you know, that that male role model has to be there. You know, that that he has to be there. And you know, with all due respect, let me hear your take on that first. Minister Minister Joseph, let's start with you.
I feel like definitely the male needs to be there, the father. Or even if it's not the biological father, there needs to be a male there. Because as women, we go through our own emotions, our own feelings, and a man won't really understand. They can read books, but because they don't go through those different emotions, you hear a lot of times men say women are emotional, but another woman can understand. So it takes a man to understand another man. I read T.D. Jakes' book, the title of the book was Emotions, and he talked about the things that men go through. When a man is silent, it doesn't mean that he's not listening to you or he doesn't want to hear what you have to say, but it takes him a little bit longer to process what you're saying. But for a woman, I know for me, if you're quiet while I'm speaking, that means you don't want to hear what I have to say or you're bored with me. But another man would understand, no, I'm processing what you're saying. It doesn't mean I don't want to listen to you. So I think it's very important for another man to be there because he'll understand the different types of emotions, the different types of feeling, because he's a man. So he can understand what this child is going through because there's a good chance that he's been there. He's been there. And I can open up and say that I'm a police officer. And sometimes I have to answer calls where the mom or dad, somebody calls, and a lot of times it's the mom, calls that, you know, I need help, I need the police because my child won't listen. And a lot of times it's young men that are acting out, they're mad, they have anger inside of them, and then I ask mom, Mom, how are you speaking to him? And the way she's speaking to me, she's yelling, she's frustrated, and I'm like, Mom, first of all, you're coming at him the wrong way because you come at a man yelling and screaming, he's going to shut down, even though he's young, but he's still a man. And then the male officers will take that young man to the side and begin to talk to him at his level, at his length that he can understand. But if I come, I have that motherly instinct. I want to, you know, and sometimes they need that man to get in their face to listen. You need to stop playing. So I definitely feel that the man's role is very important. We can never take that out. We can never, no matter what we do, try to play both roles as women. No, we need a man. God created the man first for a reason. So definitely the man needs to be there.
Now, I love what you're saying here. And I don't know, I struggle, Minister Joseph, with a lot of this because I've dealt with children for, it seems like, forever. And it's been more than 35, 40 years even dealing with children. And, you know, and I see them from all angles. And, I mean, a lot of children will lie to their parents. They will lie. Most of them will lie to their teachers. They lie to the police. They lie to the judges. They just lie. You see them one way when they're with you, and then another way when they're outside of your sight. And the fact of the matter is it becomes like, you know, I see these little boys, and I look at them like, yeah, I like the part where you say sometimes that man's got to be in their face. And it's like, okay, you think you need a timeout? No, you don't need no timeout. I know what you need. I know what you need. So even though that mother may come across that way, and I think that that can still work. That mother come. My mother, going back here, you know, all she had to do was give me a look. A look. There ain't no man that, you know, like I told you earlier at the top of the hour, my dad was rare. It was rare that he was in that house. And my mom, with six boys and three girls, she had to do a look. She didn't even have to have anything threatening in her hand. It was just a look. And her words were sharper than a two-edged sword because I'd rather have a beating from her than for her to have to talk to me directly. Have mercy, because the words cut. Okay, the words cut. We're going to come back to you, Minister Joseph, in a minute. Miss, let me go here, Miss Davis Dunning. Why would the words cut? I didn't need no daddy to be in that house, and I turned out okay.
You said, why did the words, excuse me, repeat that?
Yeah, why did the words, why would my mom's words cut like a two-edged sword?
Oh.
She didn't have to strike me. I may have gotten a beam from my mom maybe twice.
Well, that mommy power, I can certainly relate to that as well. I suspect, and you can certainly confirm, that Your mother set a tone and an expectation that was very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that there was not a whole lot of mystery around that. And as a result
right.
of her clarity, her level of clarity was such that she would not have to utter a word. She would just look at you, and you would know exactly what it is. So it goes to the tone in the house, the atmosphere of the house, the level of expectation that is communicated. And here's the important thing. You have to communicate that level of expectation and then reinforce it and make sure that it is adhered to. And if it's not adhered to, then there needs to be some consequences and repercussions. So they get that equation that, okay, this is not going to work out well for me. It's better to be in alignment with the household and to move forward in the way that has been outlined for me.
Okay, little Oscar here. Let me stay with you just for a second, Ms. Davis-Denny. Little Oscar here, 12 years old. I mean, what power does he have? Minister Joseph, I've heard what you said. My heart bleeds for these children. But I don't see the grace and the mercy that I would have on that little boy. I mean, here he is now. He's terrorizing his mom. His mom, who brought him into this world, and you're all excusing for sharing, I'm just passionate about this. His mom mm-hmm. brought him into this world, and now she's crying out nightly, you know, about this child because he's out of control at 12. I mean, somebody help me here. Somebody help
yes.
me.
well, again, I definitely understand and respect your passion because, you know, your mother is to be respected. She's made the ultimate sacrifice countless times over. Every mother does that. But, again, there's a reason for everything. As you shared, Oscar
yes.
was the eldest. The eldest sees the most. The eldest experiences mm-hmm. the most. His two younger brothers, if I'm understanding the story correctly, it sounded like they grew up in a more stabilized environment because the second husband was in place.
Right.
Oscar already experienced the turmoil of a divorce, separation, or whatever their circumstance was. And, you know, the impact of that, you know, he's still probably trying to process that and make sense of it. So you have that initial injury, and then here we are again with Neil deciding, you know what, this is more than I care to deal with at this time, and he too now making an exit. So boom, that injury opened up, dug up, re-injured, re-wounded. So, you know, his lack of life experience, he's going to process it the only way he knows how. Act up.
Mm-hmm.
Be crazy and try to, you know, deal with his anger at the obvious target, mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it, you know, and again, she deserves it the least because she's trying her best, but he does not have the tools, the resources, the know-how to process all that he's feeling.
See, and it's making me, this is driving me. Minister Joseph, I've even heard you. And I hear you all as ladies, I can hear the love and the motherly stuff within you all. Apparently, you all are parents. Educator Davis Dunning, are you a parent as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I have a 4-year-old little son. So, yes, I am. I am. Uh-huh.
Okay. And Minister Joseph, you're a parent as well. And I heard that you are also a police officer. Are you a parent as well?
Yes, I am. I am. And because of my career, I see a lot of things, and I can't remember. I think her name is Miss Davis. That
yes.
was just speaking. Right.
Maggie.
Miss Maggie. She touches on a lot of.
Oh, you mean the person on the show? Okay, that's Miss Davis Dunning, right?
Okay, Miss Davis. She touches on a lot of things that it's a reason for everything, and this child is acting up for a reason, and now again I have to point back at mom. Mom, what are the root of the problem? A lot of times we just look at, okay, I see this is going on, but not looking at what's the root of the problem, what's the reason, what happened, what started this behavior, when did the character, you know, when did this child's character change? And a lot of times I tell, you know, when I go on a call with those issues, I ask, when did this change? What happened? Did you guys have an argument? Did something happen in the household? Because there's always a child doesn't just grow up and say, you know what, I'm going to be bad. It's a reason. It's a reason. And a lot of times parents are not taking the time to find out what the root of the problem is. They just feel like, okay, you know what, I'm going to get mad, I'm going to yell, I'm going to scream, or I'm going to do this. No, you have to find out what the root of the problem is and work at it.
You know, listening to the both of you all, I can clearly see that there's a reason that, you know, God didn't allow the person, that God didn't allow a person like a man to just have a child by himself or a woman to have a child by themselves, because just listening to you all, you know, giving views as mothers and as women, you're giving, I see that love and that compassion and that I mean, just, it's a whole different take from what I take. You all are giving that soft touch, you know, you're analyzing all of this, you know, you got to figure out, you're trying to figure out, why is he acting this way? He might need a little time now, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, I want to strangle this boy. I'm not even interested in why. Well, I'm not interested in why you acting this way. It's like, I'm getting ready to get you. I'm getting ready to get you. You better check. Only one power up in here, and that's me. I'm about to get you.
But you know,
and where you all are. And see, that's what obviously Maggie was doing. Maggie here, Neil's trying to get this boy, and then she's trying to, rescue him. Rescue him what? And I'm going to go to you, Minister Joseph, as a police officer. If I don't get him now, the system might get him later. Then what?
Excuse my bad language.
Ain't nobody got time for him acting up. Excuse my bad language.
Let me tell you, definitely, I do agree that you have to lay down the law. Even the Bible tells you, spare the rod, spoil the child. But there's also another scripture that says, parents, don't provoke your children. And so
right.
It has to be a level of I'm all for discipline. Corporal punishment is not illegal. I tell parents, listen, you can't abuse your child. You can't draw blood. You can't be punching them or doing this. But you need to deal with the behavior. But find out why. Now, if you've had a child that's been, you know, behavior has been good, and all of a sudden they're skipping school, they're running away, they're doing all these things, now you need to find out what's going on. But if you see that the child is just blatant, being rude, being disrespectful, then yes, you need to do what you need to do in the household, because if they don't learn to follow the law and the rules in the home, when they go out of the doors, then they have the problem with following the law of the land. And then you have the disrespect, you know, being disrespectful, not honoring, you know, adults and not listening in the classroom. So I agree with you that you have to handle it at home, but also find out why. Because now if you're doing all of this, you're doing the punishment, you're doing the timeout, you're doing the spanking, and the child is still acting up, there's an issue. And you have to deal with that issue.
I'm sorry, go ahead, continue.
No, I was going to say, but there's an issue there, and finding out what the issue is the best thing, because I've seen it. You know, the mom calls or whoever calls, they're not listening. And when you pull the child to the side and like, listen, tell me how you feel. Why are you acting? You know what you're doing is wrong. Why are you doing? Then you come to find out, I'm not getting attention, or, I feel like no one loves me, or I feel this, I feel that. And then I think to myself, listen, mom and dad could have simply sat the child down. Or did you sit them down? Did you find out how they feel? Because sometimes, yes, when you're angry, you're thinking about the behavior, but sometimes you got to be able to pull back and say, why, what's wrong? How are you feeling? That's something that I do with my kids. I ask, how are you feeling? Why do you feel this way? Where are you getting it from? And then you find out that they're dealing with rejection. They're feeling with abandonment. They're dealing with abandonment. And so now we need to deal with the underlying issues so the child can continue growing.
I see. And see, that's the good part where that, you know, the ideal situation is that there's a dual family parent, you know, situation in there, if it's dual parent. But when it's not, because I'm thinking, I'm mad at little Oscar right about now, and I'm kind of mad at Maggie. You all can probably tell that. And I'm mad at Maggie, too, because, you know, Maggie kind of, you know, and I love my mom. Don't get me wrong. I love her before she passed away. That was my best friend. But let me just tell you, you know, I can see the situation here. Maggie needs to kind of like, she should have just kind of stayed out of the way and let Neil, as long as he's not abusing that child, he, you know, that correction stuff, he needs that. And now look at him. Now Neil is gone. She's crying every night. Okay, hoping that her prayers will be answered. And then her prayer might have been there, you know, but Neil left. He's like, I can't take this anymore. And then, you know, me as a man, and I'm trying to raise my stepkid, and you constantly rescuing her, I probably would have bailed too. I mean, I'm sorry. That's probably just bad to say. But, I mean, what you going to do? You're competing and trying to get this kid on course because later on, you know, Officer Joseph, as you are a police officer also, now he breaks your heart for real down the road when something he either hurt somebody or he ends up getting hurt. Now what? Now what? That becomes the question. And how do you respond to that? We got to take some of these comments that have come into the studio, and the producer let me know we will do a follow-up on this one here. And you all, again, I apologize for the passion that I have with tonight's topic because that little boy, Oscar, that made me mad. And I deal with types of behaviors like this every single day. And let me tell you something. I don't play with them. So let me go ahead. Let me take a couple of comments. We're going to start with Ms. Davidson. Did you want to say something before I take a comment on the air?
Well, I really love your point about Neil because I, too, am saddened that Neil did not have an opportunity to really make a difference in that young man's life. And,
right.
And you know, and that male piece is so important. It's so important. So, I totally understand your passion. I totally understand your passion. But Mama Maggie felt like she needed to protect him from something. She just needed to love up on him or whatever her thoughts were. But there was some motivating forces.
Well, see, you know, I asked you all the question at the top of the hour. Is it Maggie's fault at all? I agree with you. It's not all her fault, but a large percentage of it is her fault. You know, because you want to, and ladies, forgive me again. I can't apologize enough, you know, because why you all trying to analyze this? And I'm just picturing myself if I was the man in that house, why you all trying to analyze that kid, I would look at him and let him know. And that look would mean, when they're not around, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you.
Oh, my goodness.
But you know what? And that means that you proved the point that the man needs to be there. The father.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be a father figure to balance it.
Right.
Balance it.
You're right. Sure. And the balance does need to be there. Let's take some of these comments because I can see Oscar now when the mom needs to go to the store and say, Mama, can I go to the store with you? Because he don't want to be left in that house. Because I'm going to get him for sure. And so here we go now. But then, after I get him a few times, then you know what? He going to be right. He going to be all right. He will be all right. So here we go. Minister Joseph, we're going to give you the first question that comes in tonight's topic. What is tonight's topic again? How to apply tough love. I'm sorry you all for laughing so much over here, but that little boy done got on my nerves. All right, here we go. Oh, my goodness. And it's just a fictitious character. Can you imagine if he was real?
Oh, my goodness. He'd be in trouble.
Oh, he would be. You sure would. Oh, my goodness. He made me lose my spot on this new computer where I'm supposed to go next. The producer is not threatening me. All right, here we go. Let me find this. All right, first question that comes in. The first question comes in from a female. She writes in, I wish my parents had exercised more tough love to me when I was growing up as a child. But I found myself always whining so that I could have my way. And my father was a daddy's girl, so my dad always rescued me. She says, it didn't turn out to make things better for me. You know, so she says, she thinks that Maggie is really making things worse for him for the future. Minister Joseph, let me give you that first one. Do you think that she has any validity in what she's saying?
Yes, I do. You know, as you get older, you get wiser, and you realize that there are some things that need to be
installed in you. And getting your way is not always the best thing. It's not, because there are certain things that you have to learn in hearing no and being able to cope with the word no, because then it's when you're spoiled, and let's say you bring this into a relationship and you're with a man who's not telling you no, you'll ruin this relationship thinking that this man doesn't love you. You understand? So this, you know, being spoiled and always getting your way is not always the best thing. It's, to me, it's not at all. It's not. There's things and values you have to learn and hearing no.
Right. Well, we got about 8 minutes, and we were going to try to take several more of the comments. Let me just ask both of you all. Let me start with you, Minister Joseph, by asking this question. When, as a kid growing up, was there something that maybe your parent wanted you to do, like to do piano or play an instrument or do something, and you just kind of refused or rebelled to do that? Like, my mom wanted me to play piano, and we always played piano at home. And I didn't want to play no piano because I thought it was a girly thing. But today I wish I had made me learn piano. So, same question to you. Is there something that you wanted to do or your parents wanted you to do, but you kind of whined to get out of it like I did?
You know what? I'm sorry. I can't even say that because my mom, she still doesn't play that. When she said no, it was no. And if I dared whine, I probably wouldn't be alive right now. I'm so serious, and I'm an adult right now. I have my children, and if she walks into a room, I have to respect her. I have
right.
to. That's just something that. And when she said no, and even now, there's certain things that I feel like it's not a big thing. Like my mom, she feels like a woman should not wear a short sleeve. She feel like
okay.
as a Christian woman, you should have long sleeves. So I know when I go around my mom, I need to have long sleeves because she's just going to get at me. You understand? And I'm like you.
Uh-huh.
You know what? Beat me instead of fussing me out. She was nothing to play with. She's still nothing to play with. And there's nothing that I was able to whine to get myself out of. It, when she said no, it was no. And that's why now I look at the upbringing, how our children are being raised. And I'm like, who raised you? Because I didn't
right.
get that.
Said
yeah.
no. It was no.
Wow. Let me shift over to you, Ms. Davis Denning, and ask you the question. Was there something that you whined out of that your parents wanted you to do, whether it was your mother, father, or both, and today you kind of regret, you wish you had, like I did? I wish I could play the piano. I got a brand new keyboard. And it's like, you know, don't have time to go get lessons.
Wow. It's so funny that you use that piano example because I, too, took piano lessons, and I took it for a while. But then I just asked my mom, I said, Mom, you know, I want to dance. I think I want to dance. And there was a little, like, oh, man, because, of course, they invested in this piece now, this piano.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I think I want to try dancing. And
uh-huh.
I don't remember a big hubbub about it. But they did let me shift to dancing, and here I am, almost 50, still dancing. So they can't be mad at that.
Okay, that's good enough. Let's take a couple more of these. We got to take some more of the comments. We got to get to them. And let's see here. We start with Ms. Davis Dunning. Let's go with you. This female writes in. She says, I personally think it's very difficult to apply tough love, especially to your children who you love so much. I just think it's hard because of the love we have for them. Come on, give me a break. I'm sorry. The love we have for them. I'm sorry, y'all. I mean, it's hard to apply tough love because you love them so much. Oh, my God. You know what, Ms. Davis, just go ahead. I'm about to get mad at that one who sent that comment.
Dr. Jesse, you are too much. But I understand. Well, I have to tell you, as I shared with you earlier, I'm raising a son, a black child, African-American male. So
uh-huh.
because of that, I'm very clear about the world that he's going to be growing up in. I'm very clear about how he needs to be equipped to navigate this world in the way I want him to be able to. So because of that, I'm sure that tough love is meted out to him so he understands what it is. It is not going to be an easy ride out here for him. You need to be equipped. You need to know your lessons. You need to know how to conduct yourself So because of that, I feel it, there's an extra level of necessity because he's an African-American male, because he needs to know what needs to be known. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Minister Joseph, let me take you to that same one. She says, I mean, you know what, I'm not going to even read it all over again because I'm about to be mad at her. You know, it's difficult because tough love, we love him so much. Okay, come on. What do you think, Minister?
You know what, I feel like it, at times it can be hard when you know you have to discipline your child, but you have
right.
to look at the outcome. If you don't do it, what's going to happen? You know,
right.
what are the outcomes? What are the chances, you know, the chances? What might happen if you don't? And when you look at that, sometimes I don't want to yell at my son. You know, mothers and their sons. But I know when he does certain things, I need to correct him now because I don't need, like you said, society correcting him later on. I don't need
right.
for him to be in a situation where now it's like, man, I could have taught him that at home. It's certain things I could have installed in him and that I didn't. So because
mm-hmm.
of love, because of
mm-hmm.
the love that I
like
I
that.
Have to discipline you because I love you. You
right.
understand? Because I love you, I
right.
have to discipline you.
Right.
I may not, you know, I may feel bad, like, man, he's crying, but I got to walk away. You need
uh-huh.
to understand what you're doing is not right. So when you get older, you're used to following the rules. You're learning
right.
that you reap what you sow. There's repercussion for your actions. And so I
okay.
have to let you love me. And I feel good. It's like that medicine again. You got to take
okay.
that medicine. It tastes good. It don't feel good, but it's good for you.
I like that now. Now you're preaching to the choir. I'm liking this in that because you're going to get them. And see, the thing is, it's like, as a minister, you probably preach in the pulpit sometimes that God exercises tough love with us. And I know you do. He exercises
yes,
tough love with us.
Yeah, you reap what you sow pretty much. Even with me, I have to do self-evaluation. Where am I going through this? Is it because I made the right decision? Or maybe I did this and I didn't seek God. I know that I shouldn't have done it, and now I'm suffering this, and I gotta take it. I have to take it because this was a decision that I made not to do the right thing. So
right. All right, we're gonna try to get through at least four more of the comments that have come in. Oh, they're telling me we only got about 3 minutes to bring the show to a close. So you all, if you'll be brief on these, let's go now to, let's start with you, Minister Joseph. And this female, she says, I sincerely wish my mother also had applied tough love to me when it came to not having my way. I think her lack of providing tough love to me hurt me more today than it would have back some 20 years ago when I was growing up. The key is not giving in to everything your children want in life. That is so true, because I know how to at least know how to change oil in a car if I just – my mom didn't give me, and I love her dearly. Sorry, I was down. Minister Joseph, is that one for you first? Yes, go ahead. She says don't give in to everything they want in life.
No, you can't, because what you're teaching them is instant gratification. You're making them think like everything's going to come easy. They don't have to work for nothing. So when they do find where they're in a situation, they have to work hard to get something. They have to put in work. They don't know what to do because they're not used
right.
to it. You didn't teach them those fundamental values. So, yes, definitely.
All right. We're going to give you this other one, Ms. Davis Dunning. This one comes from a male right hand. He says, I have tried everything I possibly can with my teenage son. My son is 14 years old, and he still is giving me a difficult time. And this is a male right in this now. His mom and I divorced some years ago, and it appears that he is still mad at the both of us and acts out in school. I don't know what else to do. Do you think counseling would help? Miss Davis Dunning, do counseling
yes.
help?
Yes,
okay.
absolutely, positively, because, you know, divorce is a major disruption. It's a major change in their life. He loves them both. Now they're not together. So it's a lot for them to process, and adults can process it and move on a lot quicker than children. So I would say absolutely positively get some counselors involved and just keep, you know, assuring him that the love is there from both of them and just keep at it until it is healed. It may not be an overnight thing. We wish these very trying times will come and go quickly. That's not always the case. If it takes a year, 2 years, get through this, then that's what it takes. But you just got to hang in there with them and get through it.
Okay, all right. Let me go to the servant here. This mail writes in, Minister Joseph, this one's for you. This mail writes in, he says, I think it's harder raising boys than girls because boys just seem to do whatever they want to do and try and act tough when you apply tough love. How can you counter their trying to act tough? Minister Joseph, how do you counter? Yeah, and I agree. The boy, the tougher sometimes you want to act to them, they want to now act back tough. So how do you counter this? Is it with some sweet, soft love, Minister Joseph, or what is it? I know what I want to do, but go ahead. What do you think, Minister Joseph?
Number one, I'm going to say to pray and ask the Lord for wisdom on how to deal with that particular child, because I feel like everyone has a love language.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
There are certain things you can do to now get this child in a place where you can sit down and find out what's going on. And sometimes if the child won't open up to you, you now have to try to figure out who will they open up to. Might be or it might be an aunt. It might be someone that can just sit down with the child to find out what is the issue. Because if the child has resentment towards you, they're not going to open up to you. If their issue is with you, you have to now find someone else that will be able to sit this child down and speak words of wisdom over this child. But number one, I would say, you know, pray, because I know what men is different. I can't really tell you, you know, what to do as far as with the men. Dr. Walker, I feel like you as a, you know, as a man, you would be able to answer this if it was
I can definitely handle it. I can handle it, yes.
Oh, no, we know how you would handle it.
I want to get them right now. Just get them.
Oh, and listen, goodness.
I have kids of my own. My kids thought I was so hard at home. They couldn't wait to get out of my house, and now all of my successes, and they're like, Dad, you were the best dad. And I'm like, you don't call me as often, but I wonder why. But anyway, but they're successful. Miss Davis, Donnie, we got to give you the final one here. It's the female writes in, she says, and we're down to about 30 seconds, you all. She says, my child tries to threaten me. This is a female writing in. My child tries to threaten me that he will not eat my food when I put him on punishment, which makes me always give in to him and take him off the punishment after less than an hour. I truly feel that he has taken advantage, but I feel helpless. Can you please help me, she says. Oh, my goodness. That boy will be starving in my house. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Miss Davis Dunning. You know what? I told that to my mom. I told her when she put me on punishment, I'm not going to eat your food. And you know what? But the thing with my mom was when she said, okay, that's fine, and she left the kitchen, and when she wasn't looking, I went in there and tore that food up. So, you know, I mean, Ms. Davis, what do you say?
Yes, the threat of not eating my food, I think, would be very ineffective. Because you're going to get your punishment. Know that. And we all know this. Hunger will kick in. We know this.
Right.
And that will help motivate you and help get you in alignment and help you get clarity about the situation. When that belly starts to rumbling, so that's one. Two, just the notion that you could threaten me as your mother on any level, I can barely even talk right now. I'm just like, I'm stumbling over my words. Like, that you really think you could threaten me on any level. No, sir.
You know, I actually have like a quick story.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, we'll take the time. Go ahead.
When I was a senior in high school, I had this, you know, a couple of friends told me, hey, why don't you go out for Miss Miami, whatever the school I went to. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, you know, I'm getting my posters ready, my pictures ready. And what, my mom saw me in the midst of it and said, what are you doing? Where are you going with those pictures? I was like, oh, you know, I'm going out for this, and I have to put my pictures. My mom said, she said at one time, I don't want your pictures being posted around the school.
Uh-huh.
I was like, what? I made all these posters, and she's telling me no. I kept fixing everything. I kept doing everything, ready to go to school to put my posters up.